Good morning. Today is Tuesday, January the 23rd. Joining us this morning is the executive director from REDEC, Mr. Foster. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Can we still say Happy New Year? Does that go through the whole month?
Or I think it goes through about September.
Oh, yeah, perfect. Yeah. I had a teacher in high school. When you screwed up and got something in late, he made you write, "Procrastination is the thief of time." So that reminds me why we'd say Happy New Year in September.
So is the wrong answer.
Yeah, well.
Well, not just only in September.
Oh, okay.
Through
all the way through
September.
There you go. All right. Perfect.
And then it's Merry Christmas.
And then Happy New Year.
So I got two lines I have to remember. I mean, beyond that, I get kind of befuddled.
It's good. You're a simple person, you know.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So, you get excited about the football games? I know it's your a Steelers mug.
Well, you know, my son gave me
I'm thinking, you know, day late, dollar short.
Yeah, I was disappointed a couple weeks ago. This is a gift from my oldest son a few years ago. I have been a Steelers fan since I was a little kid, and I have no idea why, but...
Oh, yeah, Franco doesn't mean anything to you, or the Steel Curtain?
It's harder for me to name the lineup now than to remember the lineup from 1975. You know, you can just remember all that when you're a little kid. But,
oh, yeah, that's what makes baseball so much fun.
Well, my memory is much worse now than it was when I was 10 years old.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. So, got so many little ducks nibbling on the edges of that one.
So, yeah, the Super Bowl this year for me is kind of a, whatever. Two teams I don't really care about that much.
Okay, well, then root for nostalgia or something.
Root for next year.
Yeah, waiting for Norm Van Brocklin to get it back there and throw.
Exactly. There you go.
For the Eagles. So the airplane is in place.
I had that news last time I was here, but I couldn't say anything. So,
You got anything else you can't say?
Yes.
Good. What are the?
I won't tell you what it is.
That's all right. At least not with this thing here. One of the questions that I've had is, or comments, I guess, not questions that I've had from folks in the community was, great. Why only 50 seats?
Right.
And it's like, okay, you know, so it's the capacity issue as much as the frequency issue.
Right. And there's a long answer to that, and I'll try to make it short.
Hey, we got 30.
30 seconds. And it really has to do with available equipment. And SkyWest flies these smaller airports like us on behalf of United, actually multiple airlines. But they basically have three type of aircraft, right? They had the 50... Yeah, I take it back. Four. 50, a 70, a 90, and then there's the 76, which is the Embraer. And really what they do when they start a new service is they're going to dip their toe in the water. You know, they aren't going to jump in with the most popular, biggest plane because they want to see how the market responds. And so when we converted from the little rattly EMB-120 turboprops that we all loved to jets back in March of 2015, they started with just the 50-seat jets. And what they found right away was that we were filling those things up and they actually needed more capacity. And so they dumped a lot of capacity into our market. And that had to do with what they call in the industry an upgauge, which means you're going to a bigger aircraft. So they went to a...
Can't just say sizing up?
Yeah, no, it's you know, there's a lot of airline terms and you got to learn them all. But so they upgauge. Mostly we're flying to San Francisco. You'll see the bigger jet, the 76-seater and then the CRJ's 7, which is a 70-seater. And SkyWest at the same time is reducing its 50-seat jet fleet.
I would think it would be less efficient as long as as long as the bodies were on board to handle it.
Right. And so, we used to have 7 or 8 flights a day on the little 30-seaters and as you get bigger, you get fewer flights because they're jamming more people per flight. And when you think about it, it takes 2 pilots to fly 30 people and 2 pilots to fly 76 people, right? So what are you going to do? Now, the planes are obviously more expensive and all that, but the economics work. And with the pilot shortage and some other things, you know, in the industry related to the economics of the aircraft and the age of the aircraft, you know, they come to a decision of, you know, what do we need to do to be more efficient and do better financially? And so it's going to the bigger planes. So
So now you're not saying that we have the old getting offline aged fleet to start with.
No. I mean, these 50 seat jets aren't that old.
There's just less of them.
Yeah, right, exactly. And, you know, they'll roll off. Obviously, they roll off the older planes first, you know. But you know, they're going to be doing this more and more. So what we need to show is that this flight's popular, and then what you start to see is more seats or even more frequency, changes in schedule and that sort of thing.
Now, part of the challenge, I would think, Greg, is you got two ends on this baby. Mm-hmm. You got leaving ACV, mm-hmm. and you got leaving a LAX.
Correct.
Okay. They need capacity going both ways.
Correct.
Being maximized.
Right.
We really can't move that needle out of L.A. too much, can we?
Well, and so we, you know, can we market in L.A. and to convince people to come up here? Not really. I mean, you know, just the amount of money it takes to advertise in the L.A. market.
To get 50 people.
Right.
I mean,
there's
just no economies there.
So, you know, we'll rely on primarily traffic going back and forth from here. Although, you know, we've run the data back even when we had Alaska, and you can look at this data because the Fed, you know, the airlines report it, and you can see how many people are going back and forth. And it's about what they call true origin, either there or here. And it's about 50-50. So we do have a lot of people coming up from here, from L.A. for here. And so you'll see, you know, I want to go to the Redwood Coast, or I want to go to Eureka, or I want to go, and if you look at United, you'll see that one-way direct flight.
You didn't even feel the hook getting set, did you?
The what? Am I getting hooked?
Stay tuned, everybody. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Foster. Greg, the situation with United going to L.A.
Yeah.
Okay. Having the road open is one thing. The toll bridge at the end of the bridge.
Right. How much does
can
it
also
cost?
Dissuade people from using the road.
Right.
Any idea what the price is going to be on this thing? Because, you know, I would think, honestly, the operator has got to be looking at, from L.A. to coming up to San Francisco to see Napa.
Right.
Is what, $59 each way, maybe $100 each way?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah,
okay.
Probably.
And if that's our competition for the weekend getaway kind of thing, and I would suggest it probably is.
Right.
We got to be somewhere in that ballpark.
Unless
we have the capacity to fill it all
leaving here
and coming
you
back.
Know, and... You know, pricing is something, and capacity is something that you know, they have whole groups of people looking at, right? And one of the things that I often get told here is that no one flies out of here because it's too expensive. And then I look at the data for each month, and I go, well, gee, the San Francisco flights were 85% full or 75% full or 90% full in August. So people are flying, and they've kind of hit that sweet spot, I think, on San Francisco.
Well, and in August, too, you got the college kids coming up.
Right. But even, you know, November, December, of course.
I feel like January.
Well, and so right now, January, February is really our lowest months. You really start seeing it pick up again in March. And so you'll see them. They're, you know, the airlines have gotten a lot smarter about managing capacity. So, and that's just the whole airline industry has changed.
That's where the game is, isn't it?
Correct. And it used to be, and Herb Kelleher, who was the person that started Southwest, and I listened to him do an interview once, and he said, you know, early on, he made the point. He said, I said to my staff, why don't we look at profitability rather than market share? And so, so Southwest, and others, and now the bigger airlines have really gotten to managing capacity. And where they get in trouble is where they start getting competitive with each other. And when I say competitive, they want to grab market share in a particular market. And so the industry itself got really overextended, and Wall Street hammered him, and you saw big losses. And then you saw mergers.
Simply because of being too financed? I mean, the ratios were out of whack?
Well, they were losing tons of money. And
that'll do it too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, it's a very expensive and pretty thin margined business, right? And so, you saw, all these airlines rushing in to try to, beat their competition in a particular market. I guess the thought was, well, we're going to go in, we're going to drop prices really low, we're going to beat them, and one of us, we're going to play chicken. and unfortunately, then the car came along and hit both the chickens.
Or captive.
Yeah.
For the entire run, you're going to stay with Purple Airlines
right.
the whole way through, which... I think everybody tries to do that if
right.
they can.
Yeah, yeah. And so what ended up happening was, the investment community in Wall Street just basically said, listen, you guys got to get your house in order. And the thing you control the best is how many planes you put in, how much capacity you put in. And so you see, more contract flying like with SkyWest. You see them, pulling down flights.
Outsourcing.
Yeah. Managing their capacity so that they get what's called that load factor, which is basically the percent of the seats that have butts in them that are paying. And so you saw those load factors going up and up and up. And so now when they report, and right now we're in earnings season for everybody, but the airlines are reporting, and they do it monthly. So they'll look at a couple of key indicators. One is revenue per available seat mile, which is how much you got for each seat for each mile that seat has flown. And that's done in like cents, 12 cents, 13 cents, right? But the other thing is load factor. And so when you say, we increased capacity 5%, but our passengers only increased 2% and our load factor dropped from 82 to 80 or 82 to 81. That's can spook investors, right? Because they'll say, wait a minute, you're flying more empty seats.
And
right?
lots of zeros.
And you've gotten too far out, right? And so the airlines have become just really hard about controlling that capacity. And where that affects places like us is that, and I've been doing this now 14 years or something like that. I remember talking to some of my friends who are in network planning, back in the 80s and 90s, and now a lot of them are just in the consulting business now, but they said, we used to get 1 or 2 years to prove a route. We'd go in, we'd market, and now it's 6 months. it's like, wow, this, people aren't flying it. We haven't hit our targets.
So, with a basic business model, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, unless you are going to be driving the price down so far that you're expanding the market.
Right.
You're having to deal with things like brand loyalty mm-hmm. and inconvenience and inertia and all these other. Plus, how often does the average person who lives in Humboldt County, we got, 135-ish?
Right.
1,000. What percentage actually fly each year?
I don't have that number. I do know that, last year we probably did 65,000 enplanements, which is, people getting on the plane. Back in our best year, we did 125,000, 123,000 enplanements. So, we had a lot more traffic back in 05, basically, I think it was our peak year.
That was kind of still post lumber mills.
Well, it was before the recession. It was, it was a different time, but... we have a lot of market that we can go attract.
It's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? through the Decade of Difference initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Foster from Redick.
You know, we never did the quote this morning.
You want a quote?
No, I just was noticing.
I'll find you.
Which one?
The one from your teacher.
Oh, procrastination is the thief of time? Yeah. Oh, there we go. I guess I did quote.
Okay. How's this one? I don't know who this fella is. Ram Dass?
Oh, okay, yeah.
There are no accidents whatsoever in the universe.
Ooh, there you go.
There's a little metaphysics for you.
Very philosophical.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's really what you want to do on a January. So what are you sensing in the area, in the county, in the counties, post-legalization? I'm hearing property values are really reacting strongly.
Right.
What are you hearing out there?
We're hearing about price drops. We're hearing about, you know, transition changes and trying to get legal and the, you know, how does this whole system work with the pullback of the Cole Memorandum, which is, you know, the memo that kind of, you know, in essence said kind of, it's funny, we talked about this when I worked at the bank quite a bit. You know, what does the Cole Memorandum really mean? And it was, you know, boiled down to.
Everybody knew that was just a temporary breach.
Right, and anyway, it was sort of like, we probably won't prosecute you, but it's still illegal, but, you know. There's the banking system obviously is going to be even more cautious than it is currently, and right now it's very difficult, if not impossible, to bank the industry. So, we're in this weird place. And I was asked this question the other day: what's the future of Humboldt County after legalization? And I said, you know, I can only predict the past,
with 80% accuracy.
Yeah, right, exactly. What I don't know, I make up. But you know, one of the advantages, if you wanted to look at it that way, that we had in the industry prior to legalization was locational, which was we had a critical mass of people who knew what they were doing in the industry up here, and we were far enough away from law enforcement. And you know, you could get up in the hills and kind of hide and
didn't draw as much attention.
Right. And so that was our locational advantage. I don't grow it, so I don't know how it grows, but I do read, you know, we have a lot of problem with molds and mites and everything. So in other words, we may not have the best climate for growing it here. We're certainly a ways away from the markets. And you know, transport distance and all that. And so the question was, how do you think the industry responds post-legalization? And I said, well, it might be, and I'm guessing at this point, that legalization basically got rid of our locational advantage, and that these businesses in the what they call the white market, not the black market businesses, maybe.
You mean legal versus illegal?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
You know,
remember that Simple Mind reference earlier?
Right, exactly. You know, we'll begin acting more like businesses, right? And so as the margins get squeezed,
which they are,
as I understand, you know, the rational business person is going to look at and say, okay, I need to figure out how to reduce my inputs. If I'm getting squeezed on the revenue side, right, I'm either going to do the Walmart model, which is cheap with a tremendous amount of volume, or I'm going to have to, you know, reduce the cost of my inputs, or a combination of both, right? And so, you know, what are the costs of the inputs? Well, you know, transportation, labor, you know, you look at all that stuff and you go, well, maybe I need to move where land is cheaper, where I'm closer to my market, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know. We'll find out, you know, but we're, you know, we'll see. And I suspect it'll only be a year or two before we really, really know the answer to how this affects us. And They're not operating in a perfect market, obviously, because of the regulation.
And the thing the thing I have heard people reference was it was the Humboldt County nomenclature.
Mm-hmm.
Humboldt homegrown. That was going to be and keep us separate, just like Napa. You heard it too.
Right, right.
It's like, well, okay, Napa's had it for a long period of time. It's been out in the open, and there's a demonstrable difference.
Right, right.
You can't pick up a, or you can't grow a vine in the soil in the desert.
Right.
And have it produce at the same level with all of the goodies inside the soils. Okay. Hydroponics, I just see sitting there and going, okay, if I could be somewhere where it's 100 degrees out all the time and get longer growing cycles and have a closed system and not have weeds and not have to stoop over and the process, and why wouldn't I put it out in the middle of the desert or in the growing areas hydroponically, pump it through, and say, you know, it's an easier product to harvest.
Yeah, well, and so they're going to act like any other business, right? I don't care if it's a timber industry or manufacturing or even traditional farming, right? There, you know, is that top line gets squeezed, that you know, that gross margin, that you know,
your cost of goods sold,
right,
has got to be.
You got to figure out how to reduce this stuff, and so you know, does Humboldt County offer, you know, the environment where you can do that to the point where you're profitable, or are we a niche player? You know, and so Napa,
a niche is okay,
right?
But when you're thinking macro, and all of a sudden you're condensing down to micro, there's a lot of wiggles and shudders that are going to be.
Right. I mean, and if you look at beer or wine, you know, we got all these microbreweries, right? But they're still a tiny piece of the market.
AB is still.
Well, and it
drills it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's the same for Napa. I mean, there's a lot of wineries there, but, you know, Gallo is still producing more than, you know, and they're based in the. So we might become a niche player with that. I think Napa has locational advantages. You know, you're close to the Bay Area. You can get a lot of tourist traffic like that. It has locational advantages because that's a great place to grow grapes.
Well, yeah, they are fringe to a major consumption or
right.
consumer market.
Right.
We're not too close to anybody.
Well, and so that's, you know, that's the question. How does that affect us here going forward? And so I just, you know, I don't predict necessarily, but I just know that the market's changed. There are certain forces operating on the market now that are going to make different kinds of decisions need to be made than have been in the past, which was back in the day. I just need to go somewhere where no one can find me.
I'm not hearing panacea.
You know, I don't believe in panaceas. I think that as long as we're grasping towards that one thing that's going to save us, we're going to fail every time.
KINS, News and Information Times, 8:43.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Greg Foster. So, Greg, looking at 2018, is this going to be a year where you sense we'll be discovered by employers? Is this going to be an area where people kind of go, you know, either I can move here, I can expand here. You know, we're hearing about Amazon trying to find their new campus.
Yeah,
and all
exactly.
These, you know, Pittsburgh's now in play. I'm thinking Pittsburgh. Okay, that's cool. But immediately I think, why not Humboldt? And then, you know, there's the cacophony
right.
of reasons why.
Right.
But there's got to be businesses that are looking for places, even in California, that we'd be teed up for.
You know, I think there is, and part of that's just getting the word out about who we are. I think our challenge. It was interesting. I was in a rural. Economic summit last week down in Sacramento. It was a half-day thing, and it was done with RCRC, which Supervisor Bones now the chair of, and an organization called CALEND, the California Association for Local Economic Development. And the rural areas there all had that kind of question, you know, what how do we, you know, what's our next thing? How do we attract people? We have product issues, right? And so, and what's that mean? You know, it's difficult to find places to live here. We have a low unemployment, and I hear a lot of workforce issues. So I think that we need to do two things, one of which is kind of let folks know about what we do have and the quality of life and some of the opportunities here.
Business to business kinds of context.
Exactly. But we also need to really improve our product. There's nothing worse, as you know, than advertising something and not being able to deliver. And, you know, I'm concerned, you know, I just had a customer of mine who lost their warehouse space because it was, you know, and he's been in there for a long time. To a cannabis business. And so if I have someone who's not in that industry or, you know, who's coming up here and looking for a place to do business or live, can I give them can I find easily a place for them to do their business?
So it sounds like infrastructure.
Right.
But defined differently today than what it was maybe 10 years ago.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And so we need to know what it is they're looking for, and we need to be prepared to deliver it.
Ah, and you didn't think you had something to do today.
Yeah, there we go.
See everybody tomorrow.